Compassion Plans, Episode 8, Easing Difficult Pregnancies.
The world we live in is far from perfect. How can I effectively make a difference? This is Compassion Plans, a weekly interview to help you make the world a better place with your host, Bentley Davis.
It's hard to describe unless you've been through it. How nothing tastes good, nothing's appealing, and you have to eat even though it makes you feel sick. I would feel like I was going to faint whenever I stood up. My head hurt. I lived minute to minute, hour to hour. I just tried to keep the next thing down. I think I turned a corner around 16 weeks and I got up to try to find something to eat and I saw this tomato. So I remember slicing it up, putting a little salt on it and sitting down to eat it. And that first bite just made me cry. It was the first thing I tasted since getting sick that actually tasted good, like it was supposed to taste. And I just remember crying and eating a tomato and thinking, you know, like maybe I would make it.
That was Rachel Duell describing her fourth and most difficult of her 5 pregnancies. She's here today to share her project to help out other women in similar situations. Welcome to the show, Rachel.
Thank you for having me.
I'd like to start the conversation off by asking about compassion, which is usually about reducing someone else's pain. So, Rachel, what pain are you passionate about reducing?
I'm passionate about helping women who have suffered from hyperemesis gravidarum, which is a severe form of nausea and vomiting during pregnancy. Too many women who have that feel misunderstood. They haven't always gotten the help that they needed, and they feel very alone. And so I want to help them feel like other people know what they went through and understand and don't diminish their pain.
Yeah, it's disconcerting when you're feeling very, very uncomfortable and everyone seems to kind of blow it off.
Yes, just eat some crackers or have some ginger. Yeah.
It's really hard to tell how someone else feels, especially in something like this. There's no cut, no bruises or anything like that. So
right.
It's hard to say how do they feel compared to the way I felt. And I think I've had two of my friends that they were very sick through a majority of their pregnancy, more than just the first trimester. So I don't know if they had the same thing, but it was a very, very challenging time. And it's great to hear that there's a resource out for them to get information and to know that they're not alone.
Yeah, they most likely did have it. I think some people argue too much about what the criteria is for it. But if you've suffered and it's disrupted your life, then you most likely have it.
Yeah, because it's really probably just defined by those, or should be defined by those symptoms. And even if you don't specifically have what they're saying, you should, you know, it should be treated.
Yeah, exactly. Right? And we should have compassion for you, yeah.
Right. So how did you get started with this?
I had hyperemesis. We often call it HG. That is easier. But to varying degrees in all 5 of my pregnancies. I didn't have any easy pregnancies. And I also just felt like I suffered alone and was misunderstood. Mm-hmm. My 4th one was my worst one. Hardly anything can compare to it, but I lost weight and I didn't seek the help that I needed. But it wasn't until after all the pregnancies that I found women online who were just like me. And it was such a revelation, like, oh, someone else suffered as much. I felt understood and it was just so helpful. It's a strange thing that you always assume you're the only one going through this and no one else can understand. But when then you find someone who describes exactly what you went through, you're like, wow, this is amazing. So I think it just helps. I think it just helps to know that someone else has been through what you've been through.
Yeah. Anytime you're going through a suffering, just to feel heard certainly helps. So you had those challenge time, you found some other people were on there. How did it go from that to doing a podcast and a website? Was that pretty soon after you found those people you wanted to start it, or did it take you a while?
Yeah, I hate to say, it probably took me a year of being in the groups. these other women were also exploring different treatment options and ideas for what causes it. And so we would talk a lot, and then new people would come in and they would ask the same questions. And so I would have that idea, like, I should start a podcast so we can talk about this.
Mm-hmm.
And then I would hear other people that wouldn't even know what HD was, and I would think, we should have a podcast that we talk about this, like, so people can just have a better understanding of what people go through. But it still took me a while to take that step. It was honestly scary for me to record my voice, to take that step to say, this is what I'm doing. I'm very glad that I did it finally.
So do you have any speaking experience or anything before?
No, I'm a total introvert and don't like public speaking. Yeah.
That's something good to hear, is that podcasting doesn't require that you have a history and you've taken voice lessons, but it just really takes a willingness to put yourself out there a little bit.
Yes, yes. And I think it helps to have people to back you up and to say you can do it and encourage you, support you.
Since you kind of started the podcast and the website, have you learned any lessons the hard way that you could share with us?
It's funny, because if I could do it over again, I would probably do it differently, but I feel like I had to start imperfectly to get to that place. So I don't know that I would change it. Like, I think for me, the way I am, I can procrastinate forever.
Mm-hmm.
And so I kind of needed to just put it out there and then scramble to keep up. But that's a hard way to do it. So I would still recommend that you have, you know, three in the can and guests lined up and, I don't know what you're doing. But it wasn't a wholly bad thing for me, so.
Yeah, sometimes the hardest part is to get started, and once that's
over. Yeah. And for me, that definitely was the hardest part. I was just frozen.
How much time does this take during the week for you?
Well, between 5 and 10 hours, depending on how long it takes to talk to people and set things up and edit. In the beginning, the editing took a lot longer than it does now.
Yeah, you get a little quicker at it as you go.
And you realize ways to reduce noise so that you don't have to edit as much.
Do you have a full-time job outside of this?
No, I take care of my five kids.
Yeah.
I take care of them at home, and so I'm pretty busy at
home.
So
you have two jobs and the podcast, basically.
Right.
The first pregnancy was pretty difficult. How was it going into the second and the third, knowing what you might be in for? Was it still pretty scary?
The first one, of course, wasn't expecting anything except maybe morning sickness, and it lasted a long time, and it was so difficult, but I was just so excited to have my son. I think you diminish it, like, either purposely or this just naturally happens. It's like labor. A lot of women, like, the day after they've given birth, they'll say, yeah, I don't want to do that again, but a couple weeks, it kind of fades, and so I think, especially with the first pregnancy, the memory of it all kind of faded, and I was just so excited to be a mother. And then I got pregnant very quickly. So my son was 6 months old when I got pregnant again. And I was very excited. And the interesting thing was that pregnancy was actually easier than any of the others.
Oh.
And so I think that set me up with a feeling like, well, I can handle this. This wasn't so bad. I wasn't really expecting to get pregnant when I did with my third. And then his was difficult again. And it was really hard. It would have been harder, except that my husband lost his job, and so he stayed home with the kids, but it was very difficult that he lost his job. And so that's kind of how I made it through the first three. And then there was a 4-year gap when my next child was born. And so, again, I talked myself into it. I said, it wasn't so bad, you can handle it, the kids are older, all that kind of stuff.
As you've been starting this, has there been anything kind of holding you back or slowing you down?
I feel a little slowed down by social media. It's funny because Facebook is where I kind of had the idea and connected with people.
Mm-hmm.
And so I really appreciate that. But I enjoy talking to people one-on-one. But with Twitter or these other things where you kind of like spit out information to anybody, I feel weird and it feels anonymous. And so I have a hard time coming up with what to say to someone I don't know. And so that kind of slows me down, because then I don't do it. And I think that's definitely slowing me down.
Have you developed an avatar for your podcast?
Yeah, I have.
So I don't know if it helps to think of that.
That's a good idea. I hadn't even thought of that with Twitter, because I do think about that with my podcast. That's so funny. But yeah, I should just think of that.
I'll have to do that too. I didn't think of that until I heard you mentioning that. I said, yeah, I'm having the same problem. So if you met someone else who was passionate, what would you tell them if they wanted to help other people
I think the thing to think about is to try to understand your why. And it's different for everybody. Take it down to the lowest level of why you love doing what you do. It's not necessarily what you think it is, maybe, when you start. But just think about something that you really love to do. And then keep asking yourself, why do you love to do it? I think that if you get to that bottom place and you know the thing that lights you up, then you'll be more effective at helping people. Especially for my case, I finally got to the point where I thought, if I don't do it, who's going to do it? You know, like, if I'm having these thoughts, then I need to do something about it. So it's almost like you are keeping something away from someone who needs it by not going forward.
That's good advice. Do you have any resources or tools that you use in putting out the podcast that you'd like to share?
Well, I really like my mic.
Which one do you use?
I use the ATR 2100. I mean, it's a cheap mic, but I just really like it. It always works for me, and it's easy to just turn on and it goes. But I also, I don't know if this is along your lines, we were talking about Facebook. I just feel like Facebook is set up so well for the groups and for connecting with people, you know, in a certain niche or something, a certain interest can have you meet someone else. And so I think that's been really instrumental in finding people to talk to about what I'm passionate about.
Do you have a Facebook page or a Facebook group?
You know, I don't have anything. I have a group that I'm an administrator on that anyone can join.
Is that the HG Warriors? Or
I'm in that group. The other one is Preventing Hyperemesis Gravidarum. In that group, we talk a lot about our theories and what's helping us and what's helping other people. And we do support. Like, if you get pregnant and you need support, we're there for that too.
Now, this is kind of a sensitive topic. Is that an open group?
It's closed, so we have to approve you. It is a very sensitive topic. People have miscarriages and they've lost their babies and they're afraid to talk about trying to conceive again. And people aren't always excited when you're expecting again. There's really nothing off limits in the group.
I know some friends that were in a fertility group. And, you know, when someone does get pregnant, you all want to be happy for each other.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a little bit of
resentment or grief because you don't have it.
Of course, I was also in singles groups for a long time. We had the exact same thing.
I bet.
You're getting married?
You should be happy, and yet you're kind of sad, yeah.
You also mentioned that you worked as a nurse.
Yeah, I was on a postpartum unit, so we didn't get a lot of pregnant women, but, you know, there was overflow from L&D or whatever. I remember one woman in particular, she came in with hyperemesis gravidarum. She was only like 5 weeks pregnant, and they discovered while she was in the hospital that she was going to have twins.
Wow.
And she couldn't eat. She couldn't hardly drink. Her IVs kept blowing because she was so dehydrated. And, you know, you need IVs just to get the fluid back in. The thing that struck me, I was so upset for her. I was like, I can't believe we're not helping you here. Because we weren't really helping her. Like, we couldn't get the IVs to stay in. And anyway, we had all these problems. And all she wanted to do was just lay there in silence and didn't want to talk. You know, because you can't really talk when you're sick. But the other nurses would say things like, well, can't you just drink some juice? Why can't you just try? And, you know, all the typical things other women hear. And I thought, like, here it is. Nobody understands. And they're in the hospital. I mean, I don't know. I feel like as a nurse, we should be the most compassionate to people because they're in the hospital. But I feel like we're not always that way.
If you were giving advice to a nurse that was taking care of someone like this, how would you suggest they approach that situation? Or just for friends and family, too?
It's funny because when I went to nursing school, they were doing a reform of sorts about how to handle people with pain. Because with pain, you have the problem of not being able to know what someone's pain tolerance is. You don't know what kind of pain they're suffering. People act differently when they're in pain. And then there's the drug seekers, so they pretend to be in pain. And so there's this warring. And so when I was in nursing school, they had come up with a system by way to say, you treat the pain that they tell you they have, and you use a system like a number chart, and they can describe their pain and that kind of thing. Treating pain became like a major thing that you did in the hospital. And so I feel like the same thing could be brought to this situation, where if someone says they can't eat, they feel nauseous all the time, there's a lot of food aversion, it's inconsiderate to say, why don't you try to eat a sandwich? Because they just told you they can't. You know, they told you that they're going to throw up, they feel like throwing up. So if you could just listen and accept that what they're saying is true for them. I think it could help. You know, just imagine that you've had the flu before. You know what it's like to have nausea, to not feel like eating, and to just want to be lay in bed, even though you're like throwing up every half hour. Just imagine what that's like week after week after week. Nobody would like that.
No, I can't even imagine that.
Sometimes I honestly think I don't know how I did it. Sometimes it's an hourly thing, like just get through the next hour. Sometimes it's just get through the end of the day. You know, some women can't sleep. I was able to go to sleep at night, and I also took some medication for that. But just to get through the next part.
That's really challenging.
Yeah, it is. And that's why I think these groups are so helpful for people, because someone else doesn't diminish what they're going through.
Yeah, someone who listens and can empathize.
Yeah, yeah.
So if we want to support what you're doing here, what are two things that we can do to support you?
Well, if you know of someone who's had a difficult pregnancy or is currently going through a difficult pregnancy, you can send them my podcast or suggest these groups online. There's an organization called helpher.org, and they have a lot of resources, find doctors that are helpful. They talk a lot about medications you could try. And I would love to connect with anybody who's been through it or is currently going through it.
And what's the best way to get in touch with you?
The best way to get in touch with me, either through the podcast at hypergpregnancy.com or through email. My email is rachel@hypergpregnancy.com. Now, I do pay attention to Twitter sometimes. It's my name at Rachel Duell. I love one-on-one conversations, so I would love to talk to anybody.
Are there any other stories you can share from people that you've known?
There's one woman that she actually runs an organization dedicated to hyperemesis gravidarum, and her story is pretty extreme. She'd had a number of children, and she had gotten divorced, and then she got remarried, and she told her husband, "I have difficult pregnancies." I interviewed him, too, and he said, "Well, hyperemesis is not a difficult pregnancy." She told her story on my podcast. She was vomiting all the time. She would go in for IV fluids. She would get infected. She was having just a terrible time just getting out of the bad cycle that takes you downward. She was also having trouble with the doctor. Her insurance would pay for wasn't very compassionate. And she wanted to go to this other medical center that treated hyperemesis better. She was fighting with the insurance about it and all this, and she finally saw the doctor, and he prescribed a drug, and this is at 18 weeks along. And so you can imagine, she's not been eating normally. She's barely getting what she needs. She's been fighting infections. She finally thinks she's getting what she needs, and she tried to call the pharmacy, and the insurance was causing problems again, and this was over the weekend. And so the doctor said, "Monday, I'm going to make this happen, even if I have to buy it myself," or something like that. And she lost the baby over the weekend.
Oh my gosh.
She felt differently, and the baby stopped moving. And so, yeah, that was, you know, I couldn't help but just cry with her telling her story, because it's so real. It's just, she wanted that baby, and she couldn't get the care that she needed, so... It's a serious thing. Babies do die, and moms do die sometimes. I would tell anybody to not do what I did. With my fourth pregnancy, I didn't get enough help, and it was partly my fault. And I would say, if someone doesn't pay attention to you, go to someone else.
Mm-hmm.
And just keep going and advocate for yourself until you get the help that you need. And it's not going to take it away, but you just need to survive this time. This is just about survival.
Yeah, taking the edge off enough.
Yeah, so that you might be able to eat or keep something down or, yeah.
And I was looking through your podcast. You have one about medical marijuana?
That's, well, you know, of course not many people talk about this. And it depends on which state you live in, whether it's legal. Mm-hmm. The woman I talked to was in a different country. She didn't want to be anonymous, but she was in Britain somewhere. And she'd heard that it could work. There's other women online that will talk about it. And for her, it did make a difference. We talk about it in our group a lot because the legality is a real issue. Nobody wants to do anything illegal.
Right.
We just want to not suffer. And some women, you know, they're one of those political people that goes, I don't know, when legislature comes up, they want to fight to get marijuana legalized or whatever. But it sounds pretty promising. And it doesn't have to be the kind that you smoke. It can be like a water vapor or something. I haven't totally explored it, but it is kind of intriguing, I have to say.
And it looks like you're also exploring different potential medical causes and other ways to ease the situation.
Right. Yeah, I talked to a doctor who is doing drug trials on gabapentin, which is used for seizures and certain kinds of pain. So far, that's also very promising. They did a very small study, and all the women that took the gabapentin got some relief. And so they're opening up a much larger study. It's a 2-week trial, and just to see if it's effective with the hyperemesis. So that looks promising, too. All these things, of course, have risks, and that's the hard thing about taking a drug. People worry all the time about the other drugs that get prescribed, like the Phenergan, or we take Zofran, or Unisom. Some of those things help. I mean, some people are helped a lot, and some people aren't as helped as much. But we worry, like, what's this doing to our babies? And yet, you gotta eat, so...
Yeah, it's a balancing of risks, unfortunately.
Yes. And back to the marijuana... There's not any tests, so like nobody's testing this, and so we don't know what the risks are per se.
A lot of the drugs you can't have when you're pregnant is because they don't even want to do the testing. They don't even want to take the risk.
Exactly. Yeah, it's kind of unethical to test a pregnant woman because you don't know what's going to happen to the baby, so yeah. With gabapentin, what they started doing is they had a database for doctors who prescribed gabapentin, and then when the woman... If she ended up pregnant while she was still on gabapentin, then they would, you know, send that data in. And so they could keep track of what was happening with the pregnancy. And so that's a way of getting information without doing something unethical as when you don't understand the risk.
Wow, that's interesting. That also brings up the benefits of big data.
Mm-hmm.
Where you can kind of harvest just the facts without actively doing studies.
In a very small way, that's kind of how I see my podcast. Because I feel like if talking to women and making connections, either between what they went through and what helped, or talking about the other issues they have going on in their lives and whether that has any connection to the hyperemesis. Mm-hmm. I just feel like it's good to talk about this and to get it in the open instead of just everyone thinking it was a fluke and their body's broken.
What would make you feel like you really were successful with this?
If... it became the general understanding and policy of hospitals to take hyperemesis seriously, I think. It's like showing up at the ER when you're pregnant and in labor. They have to treat you because you're in labor. Maybe something like that, where if you show up, you report the symptoms and you're pregnant, that they would treat it like a serious illness.
Yeah, and imagine on the same token, just the awareness in the general population that this is something that happens and we need to support and suggest that they go in and see a doctor for not to suffer through it.
Right. The other woman I was talking about, she runs the Aidan Ray Foundation for Hyperemesis Gravidarum. She thinks that it's growing and, you know, who knows? We don't have good numbers on it, but... if it's growing, it's another reason to try to get in front of it now, because maybe something in the environment is causing it. We just don't know. And so paying attention to it now is better than waiting and if it does increase in number.
And I like that for episode 6, you interviewed a dad.
Yeah, I interviewed 3 dads. Yeah, that was really fun because dads get ignored. You know, they get ignored in the labor and delivery room and... pregnancy, you know, it's all about the mom. But when a woman has hyperemesis, dad has to take care of everything. And if there's other kids, he has to take care of that. He has to do all kinds of stuff that I've even told my husband, I'm not sure I could do what you do, you know, cleaning up vomit. And I just don't know if I have the stomach for it. So dads are pretty amazing.
So what are some resources for people finding themselves in this situation?
One of the first places I would suggest is the HER Foundation at helpher.org. It talks a lot about medication. I think it even has lists of doctors, or if you just email them, they will help you find a doctor in your area that might treat hyperemesis more aggressively. The Aidan Ray Foundation, which we mentioned, they're all about spreading awareness and help. If you talk to them about needing a doctor or medical care, they'll definitely hook you up. There's a book. It's called Beyond Morning Sickness. I think she has a website, but that was the book that really made me feel like I wasn't alone, because she told stories. And also I realized, wait a second, I didn't have it as bad as everyone else. And so it's helpful. It's like, okay, if they can do it, I can do this. So I think that's helpful. And then there's a new online magazine that's dedicated to hyperemesis called HG Matters Magazine. And then the Facebook groups, I get a lot of value out of them. And I think a lot of women rely on that for support. There's one called HG Warriors. There's one that I'm an administrator of called Preventing Hyperemesis Gravidarum. And there's one that's just dedicated to talking about gabapentin use during pregnancy. And then there's other ones. If you just searched, I'm sure you can find a lot. And there's another one associated with the Aidan Ray Foundation. And just email me too if you have something you don't see that you need. I know a lot of people, so I might be able to help out.
Well, Rachel, I really appreciate your time, and I really appreciate all that you're doing to help these ladies out.
Well, thank you so much for having me. It was really fun to talk about it.
And listeners, thanks for joining us. Get the links and notes for today's show at compassionplans.com/8.
By entering your email into our subscription list while you're there. If you appreciate what we're doing, go to compassionplans.com/appreciate to find out how you can spread compassion, like rating and reviewing this podcast on iTunes. Thank you so much for caring.
If you could change one thing about the world in this area to help people with this, what would be that thing that you'd change?
That's a really good question. I don't know if you're saying not to have it go away.
Oh, well, that's a good point. Yeah, it'd be nice if we just found a cure, right?
Yeah.